Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Fine job as always, Ian. We don't always acknowledge everybody, but we should. Ian Ozan with the news. You got Joe Cardosi doing the traffic. Tim Zimmer manning master control. Good. Tim, bring the music up. Take a bow. It's like sometimes they introduce the band members, you know what I'm saying? You got Jordan Fiegel producing from an undisclosed location. You got Dave Cohen helping out. You got Diane Newman and Dan Barron lending their part. So, and thanks to all of our guests that we've had so far. I don't acknowledge people enough. Mike D'Attelier, Jeff Palermo, Jason Shield, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Some valuable information if you want to use the rewind feature to hear that. J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member on a budget shortfall. Madeline Karst-Batson about early childhood education. And right now we welcome in Walter Dub Lane, our friend, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, I'm proud to say, UNO, to talk about health care in the country. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Looks like you've already had a busy morning.
We have, but we saved time for you, Dub, because it's very important stuff. Somebody texted in and said, I knew you had to talk about President Trump. Well, he is the president, and he was on 60 Minutes last night, and the government is shut down, so I don't know why that should come as a surprise to anybody. But he was saying that they're going to fix health care because of the terrible Obamacare plan, and I'm paraphrasing here what I saw a little bit after the football game last night, because after the Saints game, I was still a little woozy, Dub. I don't mind telling you. I was a little woozy, but I don't know that they've really put forth a plan, have they? And when... Take me through the history of where we are now with people that are signing up under insurance exchanges, because it didn't just happen, or is it even an exchange anymore? Take me through the history of how Obamacare changed the healthcare delivery system in this nation, please.
Okay, when in 2010 is when the law was passed, but it didn't go into effect until 2014. And it did a number of things. The two biggest ones that involved in giving more people insurance, and did that two ways. One, through the expansion of eligibility into Medicaid. Louisiana, as well as most of the other southern states, didn't do that until John Bel Edwards became governor. And at that point, we actually added about several hundred thousand Louisianans to the Medicaid roll.
But part of that was Louisiana put up X and the federal government put up triple X, right?
But for the new ones that were coming in, the federal government put up 90%. The state only put up 10%. So it was that's a real good deal for the state. For every dollar that they spend, we get $9 from the feds. So that was a good deal. The second part of it is that applied to everybody up to 138% of the federal poverty line. So for a family of four, that's about 35,000. So those people are all automatically eligible. Before the Medicaid rollout in Louisiana, you were almost only eligible if you were a very poor, below the poverty line person, a woman with children or pregnant. And so that was a huge expansion. But for people that are above that 36,000 range, then they became eligible to buy insurance through the healthcare.gov, which is the marketplace we talk about. This is private insurance companies selling markets under the rules that the government set. There's two parts to it. The rules set the government set the rules, and the government subsidized the premium. Now, the subsidies, the premiums for people in that low range, you know, around 40,000 to 50,000, many times they had zero premiums. So they basically, their insurance was free, kind of like Medicaid is. As it went up to a max of 400% of the federal poverty line, which about $90,000, $100,000, then the premiums get smaller and smaller. The subsidies get smaller and smaller and smaller until they go away. But the people that were on of the in when this went into effect, the people that were on it out of the country, out of about 11 million, 9.7 of them got subsidized, and only 1.7 million basically paid full price. They were able to get the government price, but they had to pay all the premiums themselves. But then what happened was then in the COVID pandemic, they decided they needed to help people. And so they increased several things. One is the tremendously increased the subsidies. And of course, because of the increase in the subsidies, a lot more people were getting basically free insurance or very, very cheap insurance. So the number of people that were on the Affordable Care Act marketplace in 2019 was about 11 million. And then at the end of COVID, that went up to 14 million. But since then, it has skyrocketed to 24 million people. So that it's more than double the number of people that were on it after the pandemic than were before the pandemic. And because of the huge subsidies, which again, those are the ones that are getting ready to expire. When those subsidies go away, then people are going to have to be paying what they paid, you know, before the pandemic.
If they decide to keep insurance.
Right. And again, the numbers that the government has produced is predicting about 3.4 million of the. So remember, we've added 10 million to this marketplace, and 3.4 million will probably drop all their insurance. Presumably, the others will find it it's still a good enough deal to stay on this insurance. Now, the other part of it.
Hang on a second. Let me ask you: good enough deal, meaning the market set the price, or good enough deal meaning
they're willing to pay the premiums as opposed to not having insurance.
Okay, but not subsidized premiums.
Right. Well, again, or lower the subsidies. Some people, the subsidies will be going down. Some may go away completely.
Okay.
But what I the number I've been looking for that I haven't been able to find is of that 10 million that are got added to this subsidized marketplace.
Added for COVID or added because of the expansion?
Since COVID. Added because of the subsidies put in because of COVID.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting is during the years 2020, 2021, and 22, there was only a small number of people that take advantage of that. The vast majority that signed on it had been since the pandemic has been over. And I
really
just took a couple of years for people to find out about it or whatever. I suspect that many of those actually had insurance through their employer, and they found out, well, man, if the government's going to pay all my premiums, I'm going to drop my private insurance and go on the government's subsidized insurance. I haven't been able to get a number of how many that is, but I think it's pretty substantial.
So one of the fears of Obamacare originally was that companies were going to drop insurance plans and people were going to be forced to go to the government exchanges, correct, and get their insurance. Accurate?
Well, that was going to happen, that the companies would say, listen, I'm going to just give you a voucher and you can go buy it from the government. Mm-hmm. But that has not happened, surprising to me. But individuals, especially the lower middle income people, a number of individuals found it better to get the government insurance instead of the premium they had to pay through their company. Now, they also say, let me say, the vast majority of the people that are getting this can are really small businesses. These are not people working for big companies that have a good insurance plan, but small business people have a really hard time coming up with health insurance.
Because of the group size?
Yeah, because you only when you get to a fairly large group can you get pretty good discounts on the premium.
And that's all about spreading out the risk, correct?
Exactly. Right. It's exactly.
Because so, you need the insurance model.
We've always had a problem. And this is one of the things, this individual policies help people, or just gig workers, you know, the Uber drivers, mm-hmm. and people like that. These were the people that were targeted to get this insurance.
Because the fact is, the only way the insurance model works is if people that don't need it or don't use it pay for it. Is that accurate?
Well, yes, yes.
Given the float in money that's invested, et cetera. Go ahead.
Yeah, if only the sickest people sign up, then the insurance enters what's called a death spiral. That is, it just doesn't work. They have to keep raising the premium, and eventually it goes away. You need to have a broad batch of people, mostly healthy, to support the ones who are very sick.
So going back to Obamacare, which some people sneer at, there were some portions of that that a lot of people, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, what have you, really loved. And those were, if I remember, the big three were no upper limits on coverage, no denial for pre-existing conditions, and also being able to keep your kid on a policy until they were, what, 26?
26, yes. Those three, were wildly popular.
And still are in effect?
Still are in effect, yes.
So John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana, did an interview. He says he wants to bring back a debate about high-risk pools, which have been outlawed under the ACA, which means – tell me what that would mean.
Well, it's like we have in Louisiana with a citizen's insurance for both homeowners and for automobile. That they put the high-risk people into a big pot that gets subsidized by the state to make it at all affordable. Well, kind of, you didn't have to do that because under Obamacare, because the pre-existing condition meant that people were sick, go ahead and buy insurance. Mm-hmm. Pre-existing condition exclusion was done away with, and it's called and so that now they can do that. So if we wouldn't need those high-risk pools unless we re-brought back that pre-existing condition exclusion.
So what would that mean for somebody with a pre-existing condition? If somebody had breast cancer and they were in remission or it disappeared, but they got to get checked every year for the rest of their life, what would that mean for them if they were to try to go buy insurance somewhere?
Well, again, this was the risk pools would put them into a thing. Again, like it's very much like what we have with citizens.
But no subsidy, and, right?
Those people, they pay higher premiums, but at least they can get insurance. Before Obamacare, people that had cancer couldn't get insurance. Period, health insurance, and he opened the gates for a lot of that, which was very expensive, but obviously very good for the people.
So, what effect has? Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. When we come back. Sure. I want to look at it from the insurance company side because I think one thing that. Especially when you tell me the timing on these COVID subsidies and people signing up really after the pandemic was over, was that if insurance is affordable, and this goes back to the original Obamacare with the mandate that was ruled illegal because you got to have everybody buying in or it doesn't work, it goes in. Did you say death or debt spiral?
Death. D-E-A-T-H.
Death.
That's a private insurance thing of when the sickest people all buy insurance, then they have to keep raising the premiums. Eventually, the whole thing shuts down.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, they had the individual mandate so that you wouldn't just have that. They ruled that unconstitutional. But I think what this proved after COVID was that people would buy insurance if it was affordable. And then we'll talk to the greater cost to society and all of that when we come back. Dub Lane's our guy, man. I'm going to tell you what. He's an associate professor of economics and finance at UNO. He's been on hospital boards. He knows of which he speaks. We'll continue to pick his brain when we come back. If you want to help pick, you don't mind if people pick your brain, do you, Dub?
That's fine.
You got a lot to go around, don't you?
A little bit.
Okay. Got a little bit extra he can spare. Pick his brain at 504-260-1870. I'll pass it along. We come.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Back, Tommy Tucker, WWL. 928, I do appreciate those of you that listen closely. Somebody texted in and took me to task because when I thanked everybody, I didn't thank the audience. Normally, and that's the only time I never have, normally I say the most important part is you listening to us wherever you happen to be. So whomever it is that took umbrage at that, I certainly apologize to you, but I'm sure that's the only time I never did that. But I want to make sure everybody's happy. Dub, let's talk about the insurance company side of Obamacare and the industry itself, and how did the Affordable Care Act, the revisions to it, the Medicaid expansion, et cetera, because health insurance is done on a state-by-state basis, not what kind of insurance is done? Is homeowners insurance done state-by-state, or is that?
Well, yeah, homeowners are still done state-by-state. One of the things the Obamacare—
Competition, though, I guess I'm wondering about, Dub, the competition between— Like, when it comes to auto insurance, I don't know. Let me just say it, and you can fix me up here while I pick your brain, because apparently I don't have much of one left myself. That is, I understood that medical insurance, there was no interstate competition, but really when it comes to auto insurance or homeowners insurance, is there interstate competition when the state insurance commission has to approve the rates?
No, the auto and homeowners is regulated at the state level.
Okay, so really there is no national, other than flood, there is no national insurance per se, is there?
Right. I mean, they're national insurance companies, but they have to be licensed in each individual state.
Okay. So is it a real different model then when it comes to competitiveness in health insurance than it is in other forms of insurance?
No, it's pretty much the same.
Okay.
Now, again, the difference there is one of the things Obamacare did was to basically federalize the rules on health insurance. That is, if you want to be part of the Obamacare, there are some differences state by state, but everybody has to follow the same rules in terms of what gets covered, what the premiums are. Private insurance sets the premiums. The subsidies are set by the federal government.
And the big three,
for instance, the no pre-existing conditions, all that is set by that. So there's very little state regulation left in health insurance.
So that became federal law, the big three, about 26, about pre-existing conditions, and about no upper limits. That became federal law no matter where you did health insurance business, correct or not?
Correct.
Okay. So let's talk about the insurance industry side of this. What has the Affordable Care Act and the subsequent expansion of it done to them, to their bottom line, to their profit structure, et cetera?
Well, again, it was very interesting. In the beginning, when it first came in there, when we first started it, because of the what's called guaranteed issue or the getting rid of the pre-existing condition exclusions, that in the very first year when they opened up these markets, the number of people that were couldn't buy insurance flooded into these markets. And so in the first couple of years, the insurance companies took a beating because everybody predicted there's going to be a lot of them. The government made one prediction. The private insurance basically doubled the prediction of how many there were going to be. And then the number was actually twice as high as that. Mm-hmm. So, but that settled down. After the first couple of years, almost everybody now has, because those sick people that couldn't have insurance came in and started getting lots and lots of care. Mm-hmm. Well, that the first couple of years, the insurance companies lost money big time. Now it's settled down. It's pretty much of a normal market. What's interesting, though, is that because the way the premiums work, the premiums are determined by that each individual should not have to pay more than X percent, say 9.5% of their income. Mm-hmm. So if the insurance companies raise the premiums, the government pays it. Okay, it doesn't raise the amount that the individual has to pay.
Returned homeostasis, however you want to say it, to the insurance company because, well, they're not losing any money. They raise the rates. The government's making up the difference.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, and also the sick people, you know, they got their, they got coverage, and now it's more normal. Everybody's kind of more of a normal market. So it's kind of, they're in a normal market. Now, let me do say the insurance companies are actually restricted by law. That they have a, something called a medical loss ratio. They can't just set any premiums. Of the, whatever premium they set, they have to spend 85% of it on actual medical care. They can only keep 15% for their costs, expenses, and profit.
So kind of like a utility company almost? Like utility company almost? Like a fixed rate of return in a way?
Actually, yes. Different rule, but the same idea.
Okay, so let's talk about what kind of increases people are looking at, because this is all played out against the political backdrop of Democrats saying, no, shut the government down until we talk about extending these subsidies. Republicans saying, open the government, then we'll talk about it. At some point, open enrollment started for this. Let's talk about the actual. Tell you what, let me take a break, Dub, and we'll talk about the actual. Now that we've talked about the philosophical part of it or the institutional part of it, we'll talk about what it means to the average person that's trying to get insurance as open enrollment begins, okay?
Okay.
When we come back, Walter Dublane, our guest associate professor of economics and finance at my alma mater. I'm very proud to say UNO, Newell Norman's alma mater as well. Diane Newman, a lot of people at work around here. 9:34, 26 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 9:40, 20 till 10. Open enrollment is underway, as I understand it, for subsidized insurance, but the open enrollment that people are looking at right now, Dub, correct me if I'm wrong, does not include subsidies because the subsidies are set to expire December 31st. So they're looking to establish their coverage for 2026, which means there would be no subsidies. What kind of, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
That is right now. The insurance companies have got to be selling the signing up people under the no increased subsidy rule.
So with that being the case, do you have any idea what kind of increases people are looking at? Or basically what it's going to be is without the government subsidy. That's going to be the difference, right?
Right, right. So with the enhanced subsidy, remember, there's still
enhanced
subsidy.
Right.
The original Obamacare had subsidies. But for instance, what it amounts to is that somebody that had been paying, kind of a middle-income person, that had been paying $9,000 $900 for their insurance will now pay $1,900. There'll be almost a doubling of their.
You talking about a month here?
This is annual.
Annual, okay.
And again, it varies by
policy.
Income level
and policy too, right? I mean, what kind of deductible you want,
so forth. That, for instance, the increase. So for somebody at $55,000. They've been paying about $4,000, and they would go up to $5,500. Again, a $1,500 increase. So that's kind of across the board that we see here.
So it would seem to me politically, and I know you're not a political scientist, but now that I understand this and look at the timeline of this, it would seem as though the Republicans are saying, if they're against extending these subsidies, they're saying, well, let's see what kind of pushback we get once people start to open enroll. And again, you may not want to go into the political science part of that, but what kind of pushback we get from people once they start to enroll. And if it's not that bad, well, then maybe that strengthens our position. And then maybe the Democrats look at it and say, well, if people aren't that upset, maybe it weakens our position and that could lead to the government reopening. Or would you prefer not to weigh in on that?
Well, let me say this that I find intriguing about that is that the growth. I told you that since 22, there's been huge growth. Mm-hmm. The growth in the people on these subsidized programs, for the people that voted for Harris, that growth has been 36% over the last 4 years, 2020, the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. For people that voted for Trump, there's been 157% increase in the
number
of people. So the vast majority of the new people that have joined the Affordable Care Act are Trump supporters. It's from states. I don't know that, not individually, from states that voted for Trump.
Red or blue is what you're talking about here, right?
What's that?
Red or blue is what you're saying. Yeah.
The red states have had a 157% increase in people signing up for these enhanced subsidies. The blue states have only had 36% increase. So the people that will be affected are disproportionately from red states.
Now, the only thing you could parse from there is blue islands in red states like New Orleans, but the population doesn't really back that up. I mean, that's a pretty serious percentage increase between 157 and 36, right?
Yeah. But it's a very big difference.
So when it comes to income level, you said 55,000. That's for a family of four?
Yeah, I was trying to look at that, the chart that I saw in there, but that's not one here. That is, just let me give you something that I've got here for a 45-year-old that was again making about $20,000. Their premium would go up by $420
a year.
For a third person at $35,000, it would go up by $1,500. For a person at 65,000, it would go up by 2,400. Those are the ones that get hit the biggest. The people that say making 90,000, didn't have a subsidy under the old one. They do now have a subsidy. When that subsidy goes away, they'll have to pay an extra 1,200.
So the
65,000, range, middle income people are getting the biggest hit.
And again, are we talking about a family there or individual income?
I think this is a family.
Because it makes all the difference in the world, right? If you're talking about a family of four and individuals, that'd be an extra $200 a month that they're paying, but that would be for the whole family's coverage. Accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So when it comes to the insurance companies, they're very powerful, right? So are they concerned with losing business over this, or...
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan, $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer, first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Considering what you told me earlier about they have to put X amount into this and they can only keep Y amount, does that mean that they don't really care either way?
The insurance companies, the insurance companies aren't affected. I mean, the individuals are affected. The insurance companies won't be affected other than if 3.4 million people stop buying insurance.
That's the point I'm making.
Money off of that.
That's what I was saying. So if that's the case.
It's not a huge hit to them. It's the huge hit is to the individual. Family.
So that's what my question, I guess, is there a financial concern to the insurance companies about people if the subsidies go away?
Well, again, the only one, again, I can think of is that what you might see when you talk about the people that are going to drop the insurance, the healthier people would be more likely to drop their insurance. Even though you're having to pay a lot, if you've got bad health problems, you'll keep paying. So that would be that would affect the insurance companies, and so if some of the healthiest people are the ones that drop out, which is I would expect, then the insurance companies would take a hit.
Okay, so let's look at it this way, because there are so many different facets to this health delivery system and marketplace and so forth. would this have an impact on physicians' offices? Would it have an impact on hospitals, because people that are not insured would not be going for regular visits? They would ultimately go to an emergency room, I guess, if they were sick enough, or an emergency room couldn't turn anybody down. Stop me if I say something that's wrong, but the emergency room can send you a bill, but you can ignore that bill if you want to, and if you do, then you can get placed in collection, et cetera, or at least there's legislation pending saying that maybe you could. I think that's done on a state-by-state level, and I guess I'm just wondering what the overall impact would be on the healthcare delivery system would be a better way to ask that question.
Yeah, I don't see the doctor so much. Yes, hospitals, again, what we see that is if people lose their insurance, they increasingly then won't be able to go to a primary care physician and will increasingly end up at, and they won't go to urgent care, because urgent care, you got to pay the bill before you can get anything. Mm. They will increasingly end up in emergency rooms. So that percentage of the population there, and again, they usually get treated. Yeah, they can send them a bill, but it doesn't get paid.
So what happens? Right.
People that are uninsured on average pay about 10% of the cost of their care.
Say that again?
There's some actually pretty wealthy people that just don't have insurance. They pay their bills. But
right. They self-insure. They self-insure, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But so tell me about that 10%. What did you say about that?
Of the people that are uninsured, the hospitals only collect about 10% of the cost of care.
So who makes up that 90%?
Well, again, that gets spread out. A lot of that gets built into the premiums of the private insurers.
Which means the people that have insurance pay for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the law says insurance, the emergency room can't turn you away. They have to see you, right? They can send you home, and they can send you home with a bill. Only 10% of the people are going to pay that bill. 90% of that bill is going to be passed along. So when it comes to society, has there been any research, or do we have any numbers that indicate overall, when it comes to the healthcare delivery system, if these subsidies are a good return on investment or not?
I haven't seen that. I saw one interesting study that said that on average, the United States actually spends, in terms of cost of care, more on the people that are uninsured than the other countries in the world spend on people that are insured.
Say that again.
That on average, the United States, we're the only developed country that has a substantial number of uninsured people. Mm-hmm. Almost all the rest of the countries have universal insurance. Everybody has insurance. So that our average actual money that we spend on the uninsured is higher than the average that the other countries spend on everybody else. Hmm. So in other words, it is a big cost.
So let's talk about
if we could just insure everybody, we might actually save money.
So let's talk about quality of health care, because that's the other thing. And again, Dub, going back 20 years with Obamacare, I know, having this job, that, you know, the debate was, and it just seems like ultimately everything comes down to, if it's working for you, I'm not talking about you, Dub Lane, I mean the generic you, if it's working for the individual, they don't want to change it. If it's not working for the individual, they want to change it. So in terms of results, healthcare outcomes, how do you measure that? What metric would you use to show if the United States system is working or not? I'm talking about from the wellness standpoint, not necessarily the financial standpoint.
Well, again, yes, it does. We do have a lot of evidence that says that the people that are uninsured, get poor care. That there are places, there are free clinics, there's emergency room for emergency care. But in general, they get poor care, and because they don't have annual visits, mm-hmm. they build up into when they finally go to the hospital, they're really, really sick. They don't get any very good preventive care or early treatment. It's really clear that the United States health as a whole suffers because of that on average.
So, but generally speaking, if you were to rank, I don't know if there are rankings, how you would subjectively do this, outcomes of health care and quality of health care that the United States gives or is available in the United States, where would we be in the world rank-wise, do you know?
Well, on some, it depends on what you measure. In terms of some types of measure, for instance, treatment of breast cancer and lots of other things, we really do better than most ever people for the people that are insured. Overall, one of the measures they usually use is life expectancy. And people are saying we spend twice as much as everybody else does on healthcare, and yet our life expectancy is lower than any of the other countries. But that's really not a good measure, because it's lower mostly because of our problems of automobile accidents and violence. 17-year-old drug dealers killing another 17-year-old drug dealers
I'm a gun guy. I own guns, but guns play a part in that too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so we have some measures of that is, if you have certain types of diseases, you want to come to the United States because we have the best technology, the best treatments of any place in the world. But for the average person, because many of the average people don't have insurance or on Medicaid, our care is not as good as others.
And to be fair, the people that are poor in other areas of the country are not going to be coming to the United States to get the best of the health care that we have, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well,
Dob, I hope we explained some stuff to some people. I learned some stuff. I appreciate your time. I really do.
Happy to do it.
Thank you, sir. Walter Dob Lane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at UNO. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.